to This Week in Sports with D'Angelo Richardson. D'Angelo Richardson is a personal trainer, fitness influencer, and athlete. Not to mention, he has an encyclopedic knowledge of sports. Each week, D'Angelo will break down and explain some of the most intriguing sports stories of the week. From basketball to football, from soccer to hockey, baseball to Formula One, D covers it all. Be in Dino now. I'm Dave Liss, D's sidekick. Today in this episode, D will detail his thoughts about last week's Super Bowl and most important elements of Tampa Bay's victory and Kansas City's defeat. If you followed D's picks for a bet last week, you would have won some money. He will also give you his NFL picks for next season and talk about the upcoming NBA All-Star game. D, starting with the Super Bowl, what are the main takeaways about the game?
So biggest thing was kind of what we talked about last week. I was like, the offensive line for Kansas City, they did not have four of their starters from the first week of the season, and it showed. It was really simple. Their offensive line couldn't keep up with the Bucs' defensive line. That allowed the back end of Tampa Bay's defense to cover those big-time receivers that they have and give Mahomes no time to find them or for them to get open, and he was running for his life the whole game. And so that was it. That was the game. Kansas City didn't score a touchdown. So that's really the biggest takeaway.
I understand that you may have won a few dollars on the game. Tell us about that.
Yes. So we ended last week talking about I had Tampa. So the spread was Kansas City was favored to win by 3, right? So I took Tampa Bay to cover that 3. And so here's where I made my money, because it wasn't hard to pick Tampa Bay to like cover the spread by 3. Even if they lost, I figured it would be a close game. Most people did. So what I did to gain some money was I bet them to cover. Obviously, they did because they won by a bunch. But one of the props of the Super Bowl was who would be the first to score a touchdown for either team. And so I picked Rob Gronkowski to be the first person to score a touchdown in the whole game. And guess what? He scored the first touchdown in the whole game. And those odds netted me about $248 of free money. And they only wagered like 10. And so I would say I did pretty well considering what I waged and what I bet. So I can't be mad about the outcome of the game. I'm pretty happy about what happened, mostly not because I have anything against Kansas City or because I like Tampa Bay, more so because I like money.
I mean, were there other exotic bets that you were looking at that you?
There were there was a bet on like the coin toss, whether it be heads or tails. But I don't like those 50-50 ones. Where I like more detailed. More picks based off analysis than I do like just pure luck, because that's just pure luck. So things like that, like I picked Gronkowski because I figured they didn't use him all season for a receiver. I figured they might throw that wrinkle in, so that's why I went out of the loop to pick him to score the first touchdown. There was like other ones about like how many yards one player would have or how many catches this player would have, things like that. I didn't bet on any of those. I just kept it real simple, and I think it worked out in my favor.
Looking ahead to next year, who are your preseason NFL favorites?
Yeah, so it's like way too early, but I think I bring this up because there's a couple of changes that have already happened in the NFL offseason that I think might make a change or might make a difference about who might be in next year's Super Bowl. I think in the AFC, the side where Kansas City is, I think they're going to be the same team they were this year. Hopefully they don't have all those injuries towards the end of the season that kind of disrupted them. So I expect them to be back in the Super Bowl, no problem. Now on the other side, the NFC, I think it'll be tough for the Bucs to come back and repeat. I think the Los Angeles Rams got traded their quarterback for a quarterback in Detroit named Matthew Stafford, who's one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league, and they basically will have the same offense. They have a great defense, and so if they're buzzing on all cylinders, I think they might be the favorites in the NFC. The Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers, you can never go wrong. And then the Bucks maybe number three. So I think it'll be three between those three teams in the NFC. And I think Kansas City, there's no competition for them in the AFC. So I expect them to be back in the Super Bowl next year without any major injuries along those lines. But yeah, so that's who I'm looking at. I think there's going to be a lot more changes in the offseason. There's going to be a lot of like rotation of quarterbacks. Like, be prepared if you're an NFL fan. Even if you're a casual fan, you're going to hear about a lot of moves, a lot of quarterbacks specifically changing teams, rotating around. I think, you know, this is without me knowing anything. I'm talking on like, February 12th? So we have a whole summer to have a bunch of transactions happen. So my picks now may change in the coming couple months or so, depending on what happens in the off season. But as far as right now, as far as way too early predictions, that's what I'm going with.
Are there any major coaching changes that you expect?
Coaching changes? No, because they've already happened. I think it'll be more but on the player side that affects changes. That will affect any odds for next year. I mean, coaches is important, of course, but I think we have to keep in mind that coaches can only control so much when the game is actually happening. I mean, they can implement strategies and game plans and all that good stuff, but it's up to the players to actually execute it, and you have to have the talent to execute it. And so I think that's what's going to be the most important thing as far as determining what happens next year. You know, I might get on a little bit of a tangent here, but I did want to mention that it's a little disappointing, and I don't want to, you know, it's talked about a lot as far as those who cover the NFL about the lack of minority coaching, head coaching mm-hmm. specifically in the NFL. Like the coaches don't represent what the players are, which is like 75% mm-hmm. African American, right? And so here's the thing: NFL has been really good about implementing, you know, minority coaches, even some women position coaches in different spots. So in that regard, you know, the NFL has never been more progressive. But when it comes to head coaching, there's a big disconnect there. And I think that comes from the owners. Like, you know, think about all the owners. There's 30 owners. Most of them are old and white and male. And people like to hire what they know or what looks like them. And that happens to be old white coaches, and that's what you're seeing. And there's some young coaches, but a lot of that might be people who know somebody, you know, from, you know, there's pipelines and connections and networking, all that kind of stuff that, you know, minority coaches haven't had the opportunity to connect and network like these other coaches have and to get these opportunities. So I think there's a big disconnect there as far as how diverse the coaching ranks and even the managerial ranks as far as GM goes is in the NFL. And I think that's something that needs to be kind of looked at, because we have proof here that it can work. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the most progressive staff in football. They have four like coordinator coaches who are all Black. They have two women position coaches. Like, go down the list, you see there's a bunch of diversity in that coaching staff, and look at that, they're the best team in the league. So, you know, maybe give more of these people a chance to show what they can do, and you might turn out like the Bucks did this year.
Are there any particular African American or Hispanic assistant coaches that you think may have been overlooked?
I mean, the big ones are, again, this is for people who follow the game, and, you know, these names might not mean anything to you, but one guy in Kansas City, Eric Bieniemy, he's the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's one that has helped develop a system that is super unique, creative, makes life so much easier on the players, and he never got an interview for anything. The team that won the Super Bowl, Todd Bowles, who was the defensive coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you saw what he did to that Kansas City offense, shutting it down, no touchdowns. And then obviously on the other side, Byron Leftwich, a former quarterback, is the offensive coordinator, and he came up with a great game plan to to take advantage of Kansas City's weaknesses in, on defense. And he did that throughout the playoffs against Washington, against New Orleans, against Green Bay, and then against Kansas City. Every game was a little bit of a different game plan to target weaknesses in the other team's defense. And obviously it came, it worked wonders because they obviously they went all the way. And I think his creativity, his ability to adapt is something that deserves consideration as well.
Is offensive coordinator, is that a primary place from which head coaches are groomed from?
It depends. Like, NFL comes in waves. So like, there'll be like a wave of hires that you see a lot of coaches coming from the defensive side of the ball, being hired as head coaches, and then the next year will be the opposite. It'll be offensive coordinators or something like that being granted these head coaches, head coaching positions. So it's kind of like a wave. Like it's a really a wavy experience when it comes to NFL. Like it really does go in. It goes back and forth, depending on the year. But it is leaning towards more of hiring coaches who appear to at least be or at least have the ability to be innovative with their offense, because it's an offensive game now. Like the rules are giving the advantage to the offense more than ever. And so to have a coach to take advantage of those rules to be creative, be innovative with their offensive schemes is becoming more and more important each day, each year, I should say.
Tell us about the upcoming NBA All-Star Game and why the NBA is going ahead with this event at this time.
Right. So I wanted to talk about this because it's kind of been in the news recently with what players have been saying about how the NBA has offered to play the All-Star Game one night event in Atlanta, you know, strict testing, play the All-Star Game, and then at halftime have the dunk contest. And, you know, obviously players being have said, and fans as well, and reasonably so, have said that they don't think it's a good idea. We're playing in a pandemic already. They've already had so many cancellations or postponements, so many health and safety protocols that have affected players' ability to play in games. It's like almost an every night thing, it seems like. And so, okay, why are you going to put these players in more of a position to have to deal with, you know, with these COVID protocols and bring in a bunch of people from different areas of the country together and then potentially spreading the virus? And really what it comes down to is just money. Like you have to understand that this sport is a sport, but it's a business. And these associations have TV deals that require bringing a lot of money for not just the NBA, but for the teams. And then because the teams get that money, you know, that means more money for the players. And so if you don't fulfill these contracts, you lose out on money. And so that's really what it comes down to. And I know it's, you know, it's not a popular answer, but it's true. Like, it's a business more than it is a sport. They play a sport and we watch a sport on TV, but it's a business first and foremost. And that business needs money to run. And so what it comes down to is the All-Star Game, you know, TNT has the contract for these All-Star Games and the events. TNT wants that money from that ad revenue that they would get from putting on an All-Star Game on TV and having a skills competition or a dunk contest or whatever they're going to do. That's going to help get the league paid. It's going to help get the players paid as well. And so even though, you know, it's in a pandemic, you know, people have to adjust on the fly. I mean, they're going to do what they can. So just go push through, be as comfortable and confident in their protocols as they possibly can be. And I think they're doing the best they can considering the circumstances. Like, it's not going to be perfect. It's such a contagious virus that it's going to be inevitable that people are going to get it, or people close to these players might get it and then force those players to kind of be out due to health and safety protocols. But what it comes down to is just money, man. They got to make money. And if they don't put this on, they're going to lose a bunch of money. The NBA feels confident enough to go through with it in a safe way to protect the players while also getting money. And so they're going to do what they can for that. And it's just that simple. It is what it is. And I think it'd be disingenuous to think, oh, just don't play. Oh, just don't have it. Oh, just forget the contract. That's just not how business works. Not in a capitalistic society. So that's my thoughts on that, because that has been quite a talking point the last week or so.
It's interesting. You're right. I mean, sports are a business.
Yes. And we forget that sometimes, that it's a business. And we need to keep that in mind, that it's no different. It's different, but it's not any different than what other companies do to maintain their revenue through these times. It's just, it's not as public as, you know, these sporting events are, but it, best believe other companies, other, you know, walks of life are doing the same thing, doing what they can to make money.
Well, thank you very much, Dee, and thank you for listening. Please contact Dave at davidmliss@gmail.com to let us know what you'd like to learn about for the latest in sports news and health, fitness, and wellness.